Thessalonians chapter 5, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Tonight we're going to look at the subject of appreciation. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 9 through 15. For God has not destined us for wrath, but to obtain salvation through our Lord Jesus Christ, who died for us, that whether we are awake or asleep, we might live with him. Therefore, encourage one another and build one another up, just as you are doing. We ask you, brothers, to respect those who labor among you and are over you in the Lord and admonish you, and to esteem their very highly in love because of their work. Be at peace among yourselves, and we urge you, brothers, admonish the idle, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, be patient with them all. See that no one repays anyone evil for evil, but always seek to do good to one another and to everyone. So you read that passage, you see that there's instruction on how you're to treat one another, and specifically, it talks about esteeming others highly. And one of the things that is probably very common to most people is they want to be appreciated. Sometimes they even like to be recognized. Now, you see a lot of fake quotes attributed to Abraham Lincoln, but I think this is one that's really true. He said that everyone likes a compliment, and I think there's probably a lot of other people that have said that as well. William Jones said the deepest principle in human nature is the craving to be appreciated. And that is a very common theme at places of business or your employer. So if you don't feel appreciated, that's something that really gnaws on people. And Satan certainly understood this when James said in chapter 1, verse 13, let no one say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, and he himself tempts no one, but each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire. Then desire, when it has conceived, gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is fully grown, brings forth death. Do not be deceived, my beloved brothers. On some of the fictitious crime shows that you see on television, sometimes it's the criminal is desiring some kind of fame for himself. And so that desire to be recognized can be realized in a very, very evil way. Even though they know that they are going to be punished and they're likely to be caught, the fact that they become famous is something that is very desirable for some. And of course, that is what we would consider to be twisted, that somebody would think in those kind of terms. But when people really, really desire to be recognized, it becomes a big problem. And that's one of the things here that sin has its roots in. It's in our desires. And one avenue that Satan uses on us, which he used on Christ as well, is the pride of life. 1 John chapter 2, verse 16 says, all that is in the world, the desires of the flesh and the desires of the eyes and the pride of life is not from the Father, but is from the world. And the world is passing away with its desires, but whoever does the will of God abides forever. Satan even used this avenue of pride to tempt Eve in Genesis chapter 3 when he told her that the fruit was going to make her wise. And that's one of the things that tempted her about doing that, that God's holding something back, and that's what Satan said. God's holding back on you and doesn't want you to be as smart as you can be. And so the pride of life, that desire, is something that sometimes can warp us, but it's this need to be appreciated can really turn into something that it shouldn't be. But I think it's something that really resides in all of us, a desire to belong, a desire for people to be thankful, a desire to be appreciated. And that can be something that is a good thing. It can be something that will help people to do good. And it's also something that can be evil as well. In Proverbs chapter 1, verse 10, the wise writer says, my son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without reason. Like Sheol, let us swallow them alive and whole, like those who go down into the pit. We shall all find precious goods. We shall fill our houses with plunder. Throw in your lot among us, and we will all have one purse. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Hold back your feet from their paths, for their feet run to evil and they make haste to shed blood. So this desire to belong can be something that can be very evil, and Satan uses that those desires against us. But probably what defines our character is what makes us feel important. What is it that makes you feel important? The world defines importance many times by authority, the authority that you have. What kind of authority do you have? In Matthew chapter 20, verse 25, Jesus called to them and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and the great ones exercise authority over them." So many will base their self-worth on how many people they have authority over. Sometimes people find importance in having things that recognize them or are named after them. And we've mentioned that before. Ecclesiastes chapter 6, verse 10 says, "Whatever has come to be has already been named, and it is known what man is, that he will not be able to dispute with one stronger than he." And this idea of something being named. Millionaires financed Admiral Byrd's expedition to Antarctica years and years ago with the understanding that something was going to be done for them. Why would they have done that? Well, they were promised that mountain ranges would be named after them. So that's ultimately something that really didn't matter that much, did it? Not long after they died. It doesn't really make that much difference in the long run. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 11 says, "There's no remembrance of the former things, nor will there be any remembrance of latter things yet to be among those who come after." You know, when we go down to Florida College, we see buildings that are named after people. And if you were not alive when those people were alive, you don't really have a whole lot of understanding of who they were. Now, it's the building that I lived in when I was there is the A.W. Dykus building, and you may remember that name because he wrote the song, "Our God, He is Alive." But you know what? I had to explain to Ethan who that was, and I had to explain to Brendan who that was. Years passed by, and when that building was originally named, everybody knew who that was. And now, as years go by, there's not that remembrance of those things. And not that Mr. Dykus would have given money to have his name on a building, but there are people that do that they want something, they want recognition. And so that does happen. People want recognition. They want attention. One famous person that wanted recognition was the wife of President William McKinley. And I know that nobody here is old enough to remember Mr. McKinley. But his wife acted like she was an invalid to get sympathy. And she forced her husband, you know, to neglect presidential affairs, you know, while she reclined on the bed and said that she was sick, and he'd have to hold her hand for hours upon hours, soothing her to sleep. And it said that this fed her gnawing desire for attention, that he always remain by her side. And one time she was having her teeth fixed by a dentist, and there was something that happened that required the president's attention, and he had to leave her alone with the dentist, and there was a total meltdown he was not there to hold her hand while she was having dental work done. And oddly enough, that's found in Dale Carnegie's book on How to Win Friends and Influence People as an illustration probably of what not to do to have friends. But she was one that really desired attention. And the point that I'm trying to make is that we desire appreciation, but sometimes that can get really out of hand. And we need to realize that it can lead to sin. There are people who compare themselves to others, that try to get more attention than somebody else. And 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 12, Paul says, "Not that we dare to classify or compare ourselves with some of those who are commending themselves, but when they measure themselves by one another and compare themselves with one another, they are without understanding." The Corinthian church had a lot of problems, And Paul is also recognizing that this is a problem when people desire to compare themselves. Is this an attribute of people of God to desire attention and want the preeminence? Certainly not. Because when you are a follower of Christ, what is your life defined by? It's defined not by attention. It's defined by service. And that's one of the things that Jesus tried to teach his disciples. Matthew chapter 20, verse 26, Jesus said, "It shall not be so among you. Whoever would be great among you must be your servant, and whoever would be first among you must be your slave, even as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." You remember that Jesus' followers, his disciples, they argued among themselves about who was going to be greatest in the kingdom. Even the mothers of James and John argued about that. And we also know that Jesus gave an example of washing the disciples' feet to help them realize that they needed to live a life of service. So it is better, really, to give service than to receive service, or it should be so. In Acts chapter 20, verse 34, it says, "You yourselves know that these hands ministered to my necessities and to those who were with me. And all things I have shown you, that by working hard in this way, we must help the weak. And remember the words of the Lord Jesus, how he himself sold, 'It is more blessed to give than to receive.'" And you're not going to find many places in the scriptures that teach us, here is what you were entitled to. Can you think of, I really can't think of one off the top of my head. Where is the scripture that says, now, this is what you should expect from others. This is what you deserve from others. The instruction that we receive is always, what is it that you're going to give? How is it that you're going to serve? And there's certainly a reason for that. In Luke chapter 22, verse 25, we are told that the greatest in the kingdom is the servant. He said to them, "The kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and those in authority over them are called benefactors, but not so with you. Rather, let the greatest among you become as the youngest, and the leader as one who serves. For one who is the greater, one who reclines at the table or one who serves? Is it not the one who reclines at the table, but I am among you as the one who serves?" And so Jesus is saying that it's ironic. You would think that the one who is reclining and having those weight upon him is the greater. He says, but I'm not that. I'm not the one waiting on somebody to serve me, but I am the one that serves. And of course, the disciples knew that Jesus was the greater. And that is the example here. Service should give us the deepest satisfaction in our life, instead of waiting on others to wait on us. And certainly, it is appreciated by those who are being helped. And we also need to be aware of our responsibility to encourage others and to praise others when it comes to the subject of appreciation. So we're not to be on the lookout for appreciation. We should be the one that is trying to not neglect giving appreciation to others. And because we understand that need, we understand the desire, we understand that we would prefer to be recognized once in a while. So it goes back to what we studied last week on the golden rule. If you want others to appreciate you, you should show some appreciation for others. One writer said, "Once I did bad, and that I heard over. Twice I did good, and that I heard never." And so that is a common complaint among children when they complain about their parents, is that their parents are very quick to tell them everything that they did wrong, but not, you know, compliment them when they do right. And, you know, Brendan is down at school right now at FC, and he's done very well, especially in some of his classes. And And I've tried to, you know, keep complimenting him on those things. I'll text him, and because I'm looking at his grades, because he doesn't know how to change his password on that. But I'm looking at his grades. I can see what he's doing, and I'm telling, you know, Brendan, you're doing so well, and it's almost like he doesn't know how to accept that as a compliment, because he'll come back and say, well, you know, I didn't do so good on this other thing. But no, you did great on these things. I want him to have a feeling of accomplishment. I want him to, because, you know, when he's not doing well or needs to be scolded about something, he certainly gets that. But we want to also compliment him and make him feel good when he's doing well. And we sometimes neglect that, especially as parents. We neglect to tell our children when they do something right. And employers are the same way. That they often don't tell you when it is that you have done something well. And in my case, with my job at Konica Minolta, my bosses don't even live in Birmingham, so I feel like they don't have an idea what I'm doing. And so when they want to review my work, I think, how can you possibly review what I'm doing when you're never around me? But they seek feedback from others. But there is a joke every time they come to town. They say, we need to meet with you and you need to bring your computer. And you know what that means is that you're going to have to turn it in because you're about to get fired. And so it's a joke, I hope, that we started a while back, that every time they tell me we're going to meet, they joke that I need to bring my computer. But they are very complimentary, and they try to be good in the way that they balance out. You know, they'll tell you what it is that you need to work on, but they also tell you what it is that you're doing well and the things where you're excelling. And we all want that. And so if we want that, we should be giving that. We should be doing that together as brethren. We should not, you know, just, it's one of the things that Rex and I have talked about as elders, and I'll relate a story to you about Jarell and I years ago, that we were at a congregation and the elders wanted to come and meet with us, and we thought, oh no, what have we done? And so that was not the situation at all. They were just wanting to come and to get to know us better and to talk to us and to get feedback on things. And so sometimes, you know, it may be that there are those like an employer or a boss or an elder or somebody in a position of authority doesn't give enough positive feedback, so any kind of interaction that may be there is automatically perceived that it's going to be negative. And we shouldn't be that way as brethren together when we interact with one another. We should be complimentary. When we see something good, encourage one another in that good. Encourage people to continue doing that good and to be thankful. As mentioned in the prayer, we think about thankfulness at this time of year, but it needs to be something that keeps going on and on. In 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 5, one of the attributes of love is that love is not rude and it does not insist on its own way. It's not irritable or resentful. Love keeps no record of wrongdoing. It's not that we don't recognize when there's wrong, but it's not our constant focus to be bearing down on what's wrong and ignoring what's right. And far too many times, people will give each other tongue lashings on things instead of compliments. In Proverbs chapter 15, verse 28, the wise writer says, the heart of the righteous ponders how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours out evil things. In Proverbs chapter 29, verse 11, a fool gives full vent to his spirit, but a wise man quietly holds it back. And so we need to not neglect praise when dealing with one another. Some of the books that I have in the library, and by the way, anybody is welcome to go back there and use any of the books at any time. Some of them were in our home when we had a fire years ago, and they still smell like smoke. But you're still welcome to go and use any of those books at any time. And before you had the internet, the way that you would get a Bible illustration or an illustration to help supplement a lesson was in Bible illustration books. And so my dad had several different volumes of illustrations, and this comes from one of those books. And so I'll read it to you verbatim the way that it's stated in the book, and you'll know it's old because of the way it's worded. But it says, at the end of a long day of heavy work, a farm woman sat before her menfolk, heaping piles of hay. "What are you doing?" they demanded. "Are you crazy? We can't eat this." To which she replied, "How was I to know what you liked? I've been cooking for you men for the last 20 years, and in all that time I ain't heard one word to let me know you weren't just eating hay." And you get the point there, that, you know, they never praised her. They never said, you know, this is good. And so, you know, she taught them a lesson on how to be thankful or how to give praise. And so it's not something that needs to be neglected. In fact, in Luke chapter 17, probably one of the best passages to turn to if you're talking about thankfulness or gratitude is the account we find in Luke chapter 17 of the 10 lepers that came to Jesus. In Luke chapter 17, verse 12, it says, "And as he entered a village, he was met by 10 lepers who stood at a distance and lifted up their voices, saying, 'Jesus, Master, have mercy on us.' When he saw them, he said to them, 'Go and show yourselves to the priest.' And as they went, they were cleansed. Then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice. And he fell on his face at Jesus' feet, giving him thanks. And he was a Samaritan. Now Jesus answered, 'Were not 10 cleansed? Where are the 9? But no one was found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner. And he said to him, 'Rise, go your way. Your faith has made you well.'" So a couple of things that you can draw from this passage. Number one is that Jesus had the power to make the lame well. He had the power to cleanse people from leprosy. But the main point that you see here is that Jesus expected gratitude. He expected, you know, were there not 10 cleansed? You know, where are the 9? My grandmother, who's passed away, my mom's mom, used to send all the grandchildren a check on their birthdays. And she told my mom that she didn't know. The only way that she knew that some of her grandchildren never received anything from her is when she got the canceled checks in the bank statement, because the grandchildren never said anything. And you know the reason my mom told me that? You know, because she didn't want me to be one of those that was being talked about. And so I was always going to thank her for what she did. And it really is sorry, isn't it, for somebody have to be told to be grateful. You know, if somebody takes you out to dinner and they pick up the check and pay for it, you know, do you remember to tell them thank you? If somebody gives you a present or does something nice for you on your birthday, buys you a wedding present, buys you a birthday present, whatever it might be, do you just take that for granted? You know, when I was single and living in Panama City, Florida, I knew that if I hung around the church building long enough after services, there was a family that was going to invite me out to eat. But I always thanked them every time that they did that. Because even though I knew it was going to happen, but if I waited long enough, I still was very grateful for what they were doing for me as a college student while I was there. So we need to be grateful. We need to say thanks. Jesus expected it. And if Jesus expected it here, you know, shouldn't we expect to be that way in our treatment of one another? So you kids that are here, you need to be thankful for your parents and be thankful for what it is that they do for you. And don't just think it. Say it. Tell your parents thank you. when they do something for you, because they do love you and they take care of you. God expects us to appreciate what He's done for us. And so, and what we're talking about here is not flattery and not being self-serving in those things. And sometimes, there are statements that can be insincere. And Proverbs talks about this. Proverbs chapter 27, verse 6, faithful are the wounds of a friend, profuse are the kisses of an enemy. And so there are times that things can be said with a double meaning. Psalm 12, verse 1 says, save, O Lord, for the godly one is one, for the faithful have vanished from among the children of man. Everyone utters lies to his neighbors with flattering lips, and a double heart they speak. May the Lord cut off all flattering lips, the tongue that makes great boasts. Those who say with our tongue, we will prevail. With our lips, our lips are with us. Who is master over us? In Romans chapter 16, verse 18, for such persons do not serve our Lord Christ, but their own appetites, and by smooth talk and flattery they deceive the hearts of the naive. Perhaps you have a co-worker or somebody in your life that, If they come to you and what they're saying is just dripping with honey and sugar, you might wonder, well, what's up? And this happens to me. I'm assuming when I say a lot of things that my coworkers are not listening to the sermons on the internet. But I do have a particular person that I work with that, for the most of the time, totally ignores me. That I could be in the same room and they would not even, pay attention. But there are other times when I walk into the, oh, Randy, how are you doing? How's your family? And so as soon as they're paying attention to me, I know there's something coming up. There's something that they need from me. There's some kind of favor that they are about to ask, because the rest of the time I'm invisible. And so this is what the wise writer is talking about in Proverbs. There are lips that drip with honey when they need something. They're flattering lips. That's not the kind of appreciation and sincere thankfulness that should be coming out of our mouths. When we are truly thankful, people will realize that. Don't just say nice things when you think there's something in it for you, but be grateful for what it is that others are doing for you. Another old illustration from Paul Harvey, the rest of the story broadcast, told of a young teacher in Detroit who asked her student Steve to help her. A mouse had gotten away from its cage and she couldn't find it. She understood that Steve had an ability that nobody else had in the room, because Steve had remarkable hearing, and it helped compensate for his blindness. And she would appreciate it if he could locate the mouse with his hearing, and he did locate it. And this was the first time that Steve felt like he was appreciated for something that he could do. I mean, he always knew what he couldn't do, but he appreciated that he's got something that he could do and do well. And Paul Harvey said this one act of appreciation was a turning point in his life. And he developed his talent, took it on the stage, and took on the name Stevie Wonder, and became a great pop singer and songwriter. All because somebody saw something that he was good at and helped develop that. And so things can happen. Things can be very helpful when you are offered sincere appreciation. We need to use pleasant words. We need to, if you have a good meal, thank the person that made that meal. If you're eating out, thank them. When a salesperson gives you unusual courtesy, mention it. There's over and over in the Proverbs, we are told to use pleasant words. Proverbs chapter 16, verse 23, the heart of the wise makes his speech judicious and adds persuasiveness to his lips. Gracious words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the body. You know, just yesterday I was at a Winn-Dixie up in the Gardendale area, and I was going and buying something for Jarrell, and up on the screen it popped up, "Do you want cash back?" And I thought, I do need some cash, so I hit the button and got cash back. And as soon as I did that, the cashier rolled her eyes and said, "You cash back people are really the death of me today." And I said, "Well," I said, "you put it on your screen right here. I wasn't even thinking about it until you put it on your screen and said, 'Hey, would you like cash back?'" And she said, "I just don't have a lot of cash." You know, do you think that made me feel appreciated? Did that make me feel like I wanted to go back in that store? Not pleasant words. And so, you know, those kind of things, you know, even though it may be small, it doesn't make you feel appreciated. But, you know, on the other hand, if you have the opposite kind of experience where you're at Publix and you don't get that kind of treatment, you're at Chick-fil-A where they appreciate you, unlike Popeyes. So you get that appreciation. In Proverbs chapter 15, verse 23, "To make an apt answer is a joy to a man, and a word in season, how good it is." So the question is, are we the type of people that show gratitude? Are we the type of people that show graciousness? Do we make people smile? Are we like the Winn-Dixie cashier? Would that be us that would make that kind of statement? You always feel so welcome at a place when they tell you, "Oh, well, how are you doing today?" "Well, I'm about to get off in 30 minutes, and I just can't wait to get out of here." Don't you always love to hear that? It's horrible. And if I were the boss, I would make sure that nobody ever said that. So, you know, even those that are difficult people can have things to compliment. And in the reading that we had tonight, you know, with Paul, just think about all the problems that Paul had. And just think about all the problems that Paul had with the Corinthians. But he still found something nice to say. In 2 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 14, says, "For whatever boast I made to him about you, I was not put to shame, but just as everything we said to you was true, so also our boasting before Titus has proved true." So Paul, in his interaction with the Corinthian brethren, we saw in 1 Corinthians how there were problems there, but he also talks to them in 2 Corinthians how those problems were fixed. And he's complimentary of that. And so we should take effort to praise things when we can and be generous in our praise. One thing that Paul always did is he was not seeking glory, although he could have, but he was not. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 5, "For we never came with words of flattery, as you know, nor with a pretext for greed, God is witness, nor do we seek glory from people, whether from you or from others, though we could have made demands as apostles of Christ." Paul was not seeking glory from men, but he came and looked forward to being encouraging and to also to encourage and to be encouraged. And this is one of the things that's very common in Paul's letters, is that you see him singling out people. Now, he may single somebody out because they needed some help, but he also singled people out to be complimentary of them and how they either had encouraged the work that he's writing to or had encouraged him specifically. In Romans chapter 1, verse 12, that is, "We may be mutually encouraged by each other's faith, both yours and mine." Barnabas was one who was known to be an encourager. Acts chapter 11, verse 23, "When he came and saw the grace of God, he was glad, and he exhorted them all to remain faithful to the Lord with steadfast purpose." And so, you know, I've had people call me Barnabas before, but it was usually in the context of me saying something negative. And they said, "Oh, well, thank you, Barnabas." And so what they meant is that I was not being like a Barnabas, but I should have been. And Barnabas was one that was known as son of encouragement. And that is the way that we should be as brethren. Acts chapter 15, verse 31, when they had read it, they rejoiced because of its encouragement. Finally, it helps us to be knitted together with one another in love. Colossians chapter 2, verse 1, I want you to know how great a struggle I have for you and for those at Laodicea and for all those who have not seen me face to face, that their hearts may be encouraged, being knit together in love, to reach all the riches of full assurance and understanding and the knowledge of God's mystery, which is in Christ, in whom are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. So I'd encourage you as you go out this week, and you may be with family or friends, to be the one who is encouraging. You know, holidays are a struggle for a lot of people because sometimes they're around those with whom they have struggles or they have difficulties, and so it's not always as happy as an occasion as it could be. But just make sure you're not the reason for that. You be the encourager. You be the one who has words that are seasoned with salt and can diffuse what might otherwise be negative situations. There's a lot of instruction for us in the Scriptures on how to be that grateful person, how to be that salt and light, and be an encouragement to one another. So let's keep those things in mind and let them be helpful to us in our life. We can help you in any way to respond to the gospel of Christ. We invite you to come. Always stand together and sing.